I'm Minx Stoll, star of stage and screen, and when I'm not busy practicing or playing with my band, I listen to Feast of Fun, the best podcast in the world.
It's impossible to talk about the hilarious cult films of John Waters without mentioning one of his greatest actresses, Minx Stoll. As a teenager, Minx Stoll met John Waters in Baltimore. Little did she know that her roles in such cult classics as Pink Flamingos and Female Trouble, and then later on in Hairspray and Serial Mom, would become some of the most beloved and twisted films of all time.
Although she's appeared in every single one of his films, Minx still found the time to develop an indie acting career and even form her own band. This year, Minx appears in Joshua Grinnell's film debut, All About Evil, as a nagging librarian who meets her untimely demise.
Join us as we talk with Minx about the origins of all those outrageous lines,
her friendship with Divine, John Waters, and Peaches Christ,
and why she gets butchered to death in so many movies, including All About Evil. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Think Minx. This is Feast of Fun. Today's show is brought to you by generous support of fabulous listeners like you.
We really can't do the show without your support, so please visit our website, feastoffun.com, and make a donation. Buy a t-shirt.
Your financial support makes all the difference.
Thank you.
Before we begin, let's listen to one of Minx Stoll's classic and outrageous lines from John Waters' 1974 film Female Trouble, where she rejects her mother's boyfriend's sexual advances.
You are not my daddy, you disgusting hippie pig. And I wouldn't get near a bed that had been defiled by the likes of you two. I'd sooner jump in a river of snot.
Well, go jump then. Go kill yourself and do us all a favor.
Hey, Taffy, baby, come suck your daddy's dick.
And I wouldn't suck your lousy dick if I was suffocating and there was oxygen in your balls.
Hello?
Hello?
Is this Minx Stoll?
Is this Mark or Fausto?
This is Fausto Fernos.
This is Mark Fillion.
Hi!
Hi!
You know, immediately I wanted to get into Kathleen Turner mode.
Oh, don't. I'm eating ice cream.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. It's very hot.
Oh, it's a gorgeous day here in Chicago, and the sun is shining, and the birds are chirping. And you are in Maryland.
I'm in Baltimore.
Is it hot and humid there?
Oh, it's about 130.
Wow.
I mean, that's not true. It's actually not quite that hot, but there's a heat advisory, and I don't have air conditioning.
Ooh.
Honey, you about to pull out that fan and
it's
sit.
It's on.
So you are the woman who lived. We're noticing that in most of the films that you've been in, you either get burned, tortured, mutilated, or even worse.
Not burned.
Well, yes. Your hair got burned in Pink Flamingos.
Uh-uh, that never happened.
Oh, he wanted to and you
he
didn't?
He wanted to do it and I refused.
Oh, okay, because I'm like, I'm mentally confusing the interviews you've done about it with the actual film at this point. But tell us about how you got involved with All About Evil and how Joshua Grinnell, Peaches Christ, convinced you to do this film.
He didn't even have to convince me. He said, I'm doing a movie. I said, I'm in. Joshua and I have been friends for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's been doing Midnight Mass in San Francisco. He did that for 12 years.
You were his first guest.
I was his very first live guest, yes. And my experience with him was really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was funny. He was good. You know, the check cleared. Everything that was supposed to happen, happened. So I went back several times after that. And every time was a really, really fun time. So when he told me about this movie, I already knew I wanted to work with him. I knew he would do a good job.
Well, I heard you had to do some very physical things for this role, that you had to run through some stuff, things fall on you. Joshua said you were a real trooper. How brutal was it?
Well, it was only brutal in that it was the middle of the night.
Oh, so you were tired?
Yes.
Well, because it's the
middle
of the night.
It was the middle of the night, and I had been tied to a chair with my mouth sewn shut for several hours.
I'm going to guess by the publicity photos that you don't survive in this film.
You're right. That would be a true statement.
Well, I mean, what was that? You have some fantastic co-stars and Natasha Lyonne, and I know that you didn't get to have any scenes with Cassandra Peterson, Elvira, but you guys are close friends too, right?
Well, we're friendly. We've known each other for a really long time, and I don't think she's going to be there in Chicago, which is really too bad because mm-hmm. we're very funny together on stage.
I know, but you know, I'm looking so forward to seeing you in Peaches Christ chair on stage. You guys are going to introduce the movie here in Chicago, right?
I believe so.
Are you guys like touring with a stage act? Are there whips involved? Or
well, it depends. You know, different places, different people are going. I didn't just hang up on you, did I?
No,
we're still here.
I have a brand new phone. Thank you very much.
You sound fantastic. You sound almost as good as all these all these divas. They all have landlines.
Well, she has a landline now.
I know.
I have one now.
A lot of people wonder is like why we haven't done an interview with you in such a long time is because you really haven't had a phone.
Well, I did have a phone through my cable company, but it kept going out on me. I mean, it even went out several times when I was calling the cable company to complain.
Oh, isn't that wonderful when you call the phone company? It's like, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Can you call back on a landline or something? Like,
well, they wanted me to call on my cell phone. I thought, I'm not spending my very expensive cell phone minutes trying to, you know, listening to you trying to sell me something and telling me to go to the website that I cannot get to because my internet is out.
I want to clarify something really up front. Right? When we first met you, you were here in Chicago at Borders Bookstore doing a signing.
Oh, for Eating Out.
For mm-hmm. Eating Out 2, Sloppy Seconds with Jim Vararos. And we were in the green room, and we met you, and you eyeballed us.
Well, we were talking about drugs.
We were talking about drugs and the sort of the way that the role of drugs in counterculture has changed. And you were telling us that it's like, you don't like anybody who does meth. And then you started eyeballing us.
Like you were scrutinizing us, sizing us up. Are these people on meth right now?
Yeah. Were you?
No, we weren't.
But I want to know why you thought
but
we were.
But it made me very uncomfortable.
I have no idea why I thought that. I don't remember what you look like, so I'm going to have to wait and see you again when I get back to Chicago next month.
And you'll see us and you'll be like, oh, it's the meth queens.
It's the meth guys. I remember you.
Well, I mean, I can imagine because back then, there's a lot of rumors and legend about the fact that you guys were sober or drunk or high.
No, we were sober.
You were completely stone cold sober, and every single line of all the John Waters films were written by John Waters, and you guys delivered it as he did.
Yes, that's true. Now, there is a moment, and I only mention this because it was so extraordinary, there's a moment in Desperate Living.
Yeah.
I don't know how familiar you are with the film.
Oh, I'm very familiar.
Okay, well, there's the moment when you see Peggy, that's me, when you see Peggy, Peggy first appears in her evil princess role, and mm-hmm. she's stirring a vat of rabies potion.
Yeah.
Well, suddenly there was no line. And John looks at me and goes, well, just, you know, ad lib something. And I was so stunned because never had I ever been told to ad lib. I had no practice in ad libbing at all. And, so I came up with pinch of rat and touch of bat or whatever it is that I said. Those lines are mine. So I should actually technically get additional screenwriter credit, but I didn't.
And the royalties that come with it.
That's right. All the millions and millions of dollars in royalties. But other than that, yeah, we never improvised. John knew every word we were supposed to say, and if it changed a smidgen in a 20-minute scene and we got through the scene, he'd let it go.
I heard that some of the actors were notoriously bad, though, at memorizing their lines.
Well, Edith, poor baby.
And she would like that. She would get flubstered. She would come up with words that to describe her feelings and emotions.
That I don't remember. But, I mean, there's one scene in Female Trouble where she's sitting in the cage with a hook. And, poor thing. I mean, she's been hours in this cage.
But she loved it, though, didn't she?
She loved doing the movies, and she certainly loved having done the movies. She loved the accolades that she got and the attention that she got from the movies. Yes, she had no regrets whatsoever for anything that she did, and she was a trooper and didn't complain. But, she'd been sitting in this cage for hours, and she just couldn't get through this one line. And It was a scene that she had with me, and, you know, I think it took us 29 takes.
Well, was that why Joshua wanted you to be involved? Besides the fact that you're a fantastic actress and you have this wonderful body of work, but also the fact that you understand and appreciate the struggle to make an independent film.
Well, I understand it on some level. I have never, ever desired to be a filmmaker. I don't ever want that kind of pressure in my life. So, I mean, I don't have any secret screenplays that I can't wait. You know, I'm looking for somebody to give me a couple of $1,000 to make. You know, this is, it's not anything I've ever wanted. I like being on my side of the camera.
But you're an indie starlet, indie film starlet.
Kind of. Yes. I mean, I'm a little old to be a starlet.
Or a diva? Little, what is
well,
you call,
I,
what
actor,
would you call yourself?
Actor?
Actor. Yeah, I think would be a good word. The but, I mean, I've worked on... Joshua had a great crew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, for an inexpensive indie film, he had a lot of crew.
And he had a very sexy producer, too. Himself.
Oh, yes, right. He did, yes.
Well, Mink, did you ever have to take direction from Joshua in drag on
no,
the set
I didn't.
Of it? So he was in boy drag when you did it?
Yeah, he was always Joshua. I never had to take direction from Peaches.
I mean, I was hoping for an Ed Wood kind of thing happening there.
No,
I can
other
only
people,
direct.
Other people did, but it would be, from what I understand, it would be Peaches in drag, but without the wig.
Mm.
Oh, that's even scarier.
Which is even scarier, because it's a lot of face.
I know, it's kind of like that wig kind of like cements down. It's like the cap in the oil pipe that
yes.
keeps the drag in, you know
yes,
what I'm saying?
Exactly. It's a lot of wigs.
So, I mean, is that kind of the reason you started recently a band, Mink Stole and Her Wonderful Band?
That's not recent. I've had a band for years.
Oh, okay, because I didn't know from going on to iTunes or how recent it was. Because you're putting together a Christmas show.
I did a Christmas show last year.
Okay.
Well, when I lived in Los Angeles, you know, I've been back in Baltimore a little less than 3 years. And I had bands in Los Angeles. I mean, I went through a succession of musicians. And
You're fired!
No, I never fired anybody. I love everybody, you know, but people had other things that were important. And I was very lucky because I got to work as a, you know, somebody who had never had really a band. I got to work with really good musicians. So, you know, it wasn't like struggling where everybody's trying to learn how to play the guitar at the same time. You know, I got to work with people who had been doing it for a long time.
Let's talk about the comparison of working with John Waters and working with Joshua Grinnell. I mean, this is your... You said that you don't like horror movies or that fake blood scares you.
That's true.
So, but you decided to do this anyways, and you're covered in blood.
I don't mind being covered in fake blood. I just don't want to watch it.
So you're going to, I mean, you've already seen the film.
Two completely different things entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, does it change to seeing a horror film when you're actually in it and you're actually being killed? Or
That I can deal with. I can watch that because I was there and I know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't watch any of... I do not go to any horror movies. And, every now and then I'll do these conventions and people, you know, will be there from, all, you know, the Saw movies. And, you know, there's a huge fan base for horror movies. People love them. And they'll be talking to me about this one and people will give me DVDs of horror movies that they've made. And I never watch them. I don't like them.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that, because I'm kind of on the same school as you are, whereas Mark.
I love watching horror films.
I mean,
more blood, the better.
For me,
scary.
Yeah, I just don't, you know, life is scary enough. I've seen people getting shot. I've seen, you know, it's like because you live in Baltimore and I imagine it's, you know, it's a rough city sometimes.
Where I live is extremely pleasant.
But,
very, very
but I can
nice
imagine
way.
That it's like seeing a horror films. I don't understand the appeal when you can just like walk out on the street and see violence there. It's like to see violence in film. I don't, you know.
Well, there's you know, the one theory that I've heard more than any other is that it's a safe violence. It's the sort of same thing where people like to ride roller coasters. You would have to pay me a very large amount of money to get on a roller coaster.
That's funny. I'm
not a thrill seeker. I do not care to be terrified.
Well, let's be clear about Josh's film, though. Would you classify it more as a horror film or it's a comedy, a black comedy?
It's both.
Mm-hmm.
You might, I think... I mean, have you seen it?
No, we're going to see it when you guys are here in Chicago.
There's some real, you know, blood stuff. I mean, there's some stuff that's pretty kind of scary. But then there's this little, you know, every time it gets a little scary, there's a comic twist to it. So it works. You know, I mean, I'll sit there with my hands not covering my eyes. You know, I'll be sort of peeking through fingers, and then I can, then something funny will happen, and I can relax again. I like the movie. I think the movie's funny. Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly, I think the early movies that you made were quite shocking to the audiences.
But they weren't scary.
Yeah.
Well, Well, sometimes, you know, to a very conservative person, a shocking film can be scary, I guess, mm-hmm. right?
Well, yes, but we're talking about scary in a different mm-hmm. way. We're not talking about scary like, don't go in that room, don't open that door. It's a different kind of scary.
It's violence is what we're talking about.
It's violence versus singing assholes.
Kind of, yeah.
But I wonder, though, have we become more desensitized to the kind of shocking material that you guys produced in the 60s and 70s?
Oh, absolutely. You know, look mm-hmm. at television. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the TV shows now, I mean, just even if you're just watching the medical shows, mm-hmm. you know, they're showing, you know, they show you the operation. I don't want to see that. there'll be the doctors will be standing around the patient operating, and then suddenly the camera will focus on the cut, you know, the incision. It's like, I don't need to see that.
You know, John Waters said in an interview that watching some porn is sort of like watching operations on television.
Well, I never watch porn.
Well,
the only person, the only person's sex I'm even remotely interested in is my own.
Tell us about, because I felt that a lot of the things that you guys did back then, it wasn't necessarily aimed to shock people. You did it because it made you laugh.
Well, you know, I did it because it made me laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, we always had fun. I mean, our sets were very professional. We were on time. We knew our lines. We were available and ready when the camera was ready.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a great time. You know, I mean, we would get our laughing done during rehearsals.
And then when you were taping, it was all business.
We weren't taping, we were filming.
Oh, you were filming. Has it been easier to do these films now that you're not so worried about, like, getting every single thing right on every single take?
I guess so. I mean, in a sense it is, and in a sense it isn't, because now, since I'm not worried about getting my lines all right on the first take, there's a kind of a pressure that's off, but that pressure wasn't completely bad.
Let's talk about your film, Multiple Maniacs.
Yes.
Where you are the religious whore in the church.
Yes.
Having a rosary sex scene with... what exactly? You were sticking a rosary or pulling a rosary out of Divine's butt.
I was pretending to do that.
You're not... That didn't actually happen.
Divine was wearing pantyhose.
And so how was the reaction? Because you guys have some conservative family members. Did any of them actually ever find out about it or hear about it? What was their reaction to it?
Well, my mother was convinced for many years that I had been placed on this earth purely and solely to cause her grief. And she got over that eventually. She she got over that, but I'd never let her see.
Well, did your mom like ever think of you as a successful actor?
Finally.
When did that happen?
Probably it happened. I think probably around Serial Mom.
So it was. at what point in the movie did she go? This is where my daughter. I'm proud of my daughter.
Well, she became. My mother really enjoyed, you know, my little celebrity status.
Uh-huh.
And she was always incredibly fond of John Waters. You know, even when she didn't approve of him, she couldn't help herself from liking him. He would always make her laugh. So she was very fond of him.
You know what it is about John Waters, from my experience in interacting with him, is that he speaks the language of uptight parents. Like he can relate to them, you know?
Yes, he knows how to do that.
And yet, at the same time, he's obviously a cultural icon. And so, you know, when he's trying to convince someone like your parents to do something, it's an easy task.
Well, he put my mother in Hairspray.
What does your mother play?
She's actually in the big crowd scene, the auto show scene. She's an extra. And she did film one little sort of vignette, but it got cut. So, and she was happy to do that. He had originally wanted her to be a jury member in Female Trouble,
mm-hmm.
and she didn't want to do that because it was too many days. It was too long a process.
Let's talk about Female Trouble. You said that the character of Taffy Davenport, which is Divine's daughter in the film, is the character that you relate to the most on a very deep level.
Yes, it is.
How come?
Well, because Taffy was so misunderstood and so desperately unhappy. And I was a very unhappy child. I was certainly not an only child. I'm actually the fifth of 10 kids.
Wow.
But
I'm not going to ask you what your family's religious beliefs are.
We know. Which made all of that, you know, defiling of the churches even more delicious to me. Mm. But you know, I was unhappy and I was lonely and I was often considered to be bad when I wasn't really trying to be bad. I was just really unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was characterized as a bad kid, and that's what I sort of felt like Taffy was. Taffy had this characterization of being bad, but she wasn't bad. And I think, you know, if there'd been any kind of mother-daughter affection or any you know mother-to-daughter affection, Taffy would have been very different. As I think I would have been very different. I had a very difficult relationship with my mother.
When you delivered the line, "I wouldn't suck your lousy dick if I was suffocating and there was oxygen in your balls," how many? That was a single take.
Oh yeah, I didn't want to have to say that twice.
How often?
I don't even like to say it now.
Really?
Well, actually, I rarely thoroughly enjoy reciting old lines.
Mm.
So how often does that happen, though? That
people want me to say it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would do ringtones.
Not all the time, but on a fairly regular... I mean, it happens periodically. People want me to sign that on photographs. A fair amount.
And you say no, or do you comply?
Oh, you know, if somebody's giving me $20 for a signed for an autographed photograph, I'll say whatever they want. Mm-hmm.
Okay, people, her price is $20. Just come to Chicago.
I think that's a good idea, Fausto. Make them into ringtones and just say you want it, buy it.
Yeah.
Would you consider releasing ringtones?
What's that?
Would you consider releasing ringtones?
Well, I suppose. I don't know how to do that, but I don't know if I would really want to release that as a ringtone.
I mean, you have so many wonderful lines from
many
movies.
Especially in Female Trouble.
Mm-hmm. In Female Trouble and Serial Mom.
Yeah.
Pink Flamingos.
Yeah, John wrote me some really great dialogue.
Absolutely.
He truly did.
Well, we have some questions from our listeners, and one of the first ones is along this kind of line. So you don't have to say the line, but Rick Aiello and Box Boy Rich both want to know, what is the line that most people say to you or that they want you to say?
Oh, that one.
About the oxygen on the balls. Okay.
Yeah, that one happens a lot. Especially gay men.
I wonder why they relate to that.
Why.
I wonder why.
Oh, man, X, what was it like? What was the one piece of advice that Divine gave to you that you still remember to this day? Did Divine even give you any good advice?
Divine never gave me any advice.
Don't eat too much.
No, that was never a piece of advice that Divine gave me. Divine was a very generous person. Mm.
To a fault. He had like terrible credit card debt.
Well, yeah, but you know, I mean, he loved to give parties and he, you know, loved to give presents and, you know, so I mean, it ran up, you know, he didn't really have a grasp on finances.
Mm.
But you know, he spent a lot of money on other people.
Did you realize that when you were working with Divine and John Waters, that Divine, to this day, I would say next to RuPaul, Divine is the most well-known, famous, beloved drag queen of all time?
I would have had no way of knowing that.
Mm. At what point did that sort of sink into you?
I don't know. I mean,
right now.
Now, yes, right this minute. I mean, I've known that for a long time,
mm-hmm.
you know, that Divine, because mainly I understand it because I go out in the world and I see a lot of drag queens in the world, and a lot of them, especially the heavy ones, automatically go in the direction of Divine. They, you know, the very tall eyebrows and the big, you know, the big lips, they go after the Divine look from Pink Flamingos. They're not shaving their heads, but, you know, that huge face.
But what I'm noticing that is a lot of drag queens still to this day, and Divine was sort of broke off from this, is that they all want to be pretty. They all want to be 1950s Hollywood starlets. But in reality, you're this brutal man in a dress.
Well, I think back in the 50s and 60s, you know, and before that, that was the case. I think right now, I mean, I don't know what drag is like in Chicago, but I know in L.A., you know, drag is very often funny.
Mm.
You know, drag is very often comic.
Drag is not funny.
Sorry. I'm sorry. But, I mean, seriously, like, very funny.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. It's that a lot of drag queens take themselves so seriously that when the audience or someone laughs about what they do, they get offended.
Mm. Well, you know, I guess it depends on what they're after.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if it's a man who really would like people to think that he's a woman, that, I guess, wouldn't be funny. But, you know, that's very different. You know, I mean, it depends on how theatrical the drag is, too. I mean, if a man really wants to be taken seriously as a woman, he's not going to go out looking like a, you know, a Vegas showgirl on steroids.
Absolutely. Well, Reed Loveland wants to know, Mink, have you if you had never known John Waters, what do you think you'd be doing today?
I have no idea. I often think that I might have been a lawyer because I like to argue.
Mm-hmm.
But I also hated school, so I might not have made it through all those years that it would have taken me to get there. One of my jobs, and I had this job. I had met John by the time I had it, but I hadn't worked with him yet, was I was working at Scribner's Bookstore in New York, and which no longer exists, but at the time it was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I might have stayed there instead of coming back to... John and I were actually roommates at the moment, at that time, and we moved back to Baltimore together, and then, you know, I got the phone call, hey, you want to be in a movie? So I might have stayed at Scribner's and gotten into publishing.
Hmm. And don't you play a librarian? Do you play a librarian?
I do. I play a librarian, and I'm a big, you know, I'm a huge book lover, and I was a proofreader and copy editor for years.
Did Joshua write that into the movie because he knows that you like books a lot?
I don't think so.
Mm. Well, because Natasha's a librarian too, right?
Yeah.
Yes. And see, this movie—you know, Natasha and I made a movie years ago,
mm-hmm,
called "But I'm a Cheerleader."
Oh, fabulous, that's right! Film. Fantastic.
With RuPaul as a guy.
Well, you have
was he as a guy?
You have an upcoming film, Stuck.
Stuck has been out on the circuit for a while, and it has just—it's been on the festival circuit for a while, and it has been picked up by Aristocal, who are the people who produce the Eating Out films.
Mm-hmm.
It's been picked up by Aristocal Distribution for DVD distribution. So if you want to see it, put it on your Netflix queue.
And it's a Women in Prison film.
It's Women in Prison, and it's me, Janie Wiedlin.
From the Go-Go's.
From the Go-Go's. Karen Black.
Love her.
Starina Johnson, and a couple of other people who are really good. Susan Traylor and Pleasant Gaiman. And I think it's really fun. There's a lot going on. It's really fun. It's also really sad.
What is the status on John Waters' next film, Fruitcake? Is it going to happen?
It's still completely up in the air. You know, I've asked John. I said, people ask me all the time, what do you want me to tell? You know, what do you want me to say when people ask me what's going on with Fruitcake? He has been unable to raise the money.
How is that web series?
Oh, yeah, he's doing that. No, I sort of don't think that's going to happen. But he has been trying to raise the money. I mean, if he wanted to make it for less money, he could get less money.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't want to work for, you know, he doesn't want to do that. And
it's like asking Michelangelo to paint with a Q-tip.
Kind of. Yeah, good analogy.
Mm-hmm.
Will there ever, I mean, is the way that films are being made and sold and produced changing to the point that there may not be another John Waters or Dreamlanders or
you
today?
Who knows? I mean, the thing is that now anybody with a dollar and a DVD, you know, and a video camera can make a movie, and that's great. The bad thing is that anybody with a dollar and a DVD camera can, you know, a video camera can make a movie. You know, so it's good and bad. You know, there's just a huge amount of product, and some of it's good and some of it isn't. And you know, when we were making films back in the 60s, it was hard to get distribution, and John had to do a lot of work to get distribution, but there weren't quite as many people, you know, in the independent genre mm-hmm. who were trying.
Well, you All know? About Evil's kind of going in that, because what I read from John Waters is that he would take the reels of film, stick in the trunk of his car, and drive around California and New York showing them in theaters. And in a lot of way, you and Joshua and Elvira and all the cast of this film are going to different cities across the country and showing it.
Yes.
So in a way, it's like we're back to where we are at the beginning.
Well, it's been very interesting because, you know, Peaches goes on the road and you know, takes the film. Now, I'm personally going to be with the film in Chicago and Milwaukee mm-hmm. and in Phoenix and Atlanta and I think Minneapolis. And I love to do this because some of these places are places I've never been. And while I've been to Chicago, I like Chicago, so I'm always glad to come back to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a certain amount of stage show that goes along with it, you know, more or less, depending on who's on the trip.
Mm-hmm.
And in Los Angeles, not this past weekend, but the weekend before, quite a lot of people were there because a lot of people who are in the movie live there, and I was there. So, you know, he did a full, you know, production number before the movie, and then had me and Cassandra up on the stage to talk for a while, and then more production number, and Thomas Decker, who's in the movie, who is fabulous, had written this great song, and he performed the song. You know, so there was a lot going on before the movie. Now, that doesn't happen in every city.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to do a little, like, stage act, and you're going to pull out your whips and plates and juggle. And...
Oh, yeah, I'm going to do that on a tricycle.
Well, what
not
is
a tricycle,
for?
A unicycle. I'm gonna balance a plate on my nose while riding a unicycle with a monkey.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, we're so looking forward to seeing you here in Chicago, Mink Stole. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Is our time up?
We can go longer if you like. I got more questions here for you. they always say that to us.
They're always like a half an hour, and then when the half an hour is, they're like, "No, I want more.
I want more." One thing I would love if you did us the honor, say, "Hi, my name is Mink Stole, star of stage and screen. When I'm not busy, and you fill in the blank with whatever it is that you like to do, I like to listen to Feast of Fun, my favorite podcast in the universe."
I have to write that down.
So say who you are, what you do, and when you're not busy doing that, you like to listen to Feast of Fun.
Okay, here we go. Do I get a second take?
You get as many as you need.
Okay. We got all day here.
Okay. Hi, I'm Mink Stole. Okay, second take. See, there I go.
See, this is, it's not like John Waters, so you can have all the time you
want.
Yeah,
but with John Waters, I had time to practice my script. You
know, true.
Kind of.
I'm making you improv.
I know. And
it's a Chicago tradition.
Totally. Actually, I'm getting better at it. Okay, ready?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Mink Stole, star of stage and screen. And when I'm not busy practicing or playing with my band, I listen to Feast of Fun.
Yay!
Yay!
I'd say the best podcast in the world.
Oh, the best podcast in the world.
Yay!
Yay!
Thank you so much!
Well, thank you. This was really fun.
It's a pleasure. Anytime.
And thank you for being the impetus for getting me a new phone system.
You know, there's nothing like a landline to make your life better because the frustration of not being able to communicate with people is so hard.
I had to do an actual phone interview a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. kneeling on the floor of my office with my really crapola cell phone. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't move in any direction because the cell phone coverage here is really bad.
Right.
And now you're sitting on a chaise lounge with
now I'm reclining on my bed.
With your princess phone.
Yes, I do have a sort of a princess phone. Actually, I have to go shopping for fabulous phones.
Mm.
Oh, it's so nice. Your bedroom, I read in an interview, is your favorite place in your whole home.
Did I ever say that?
Yeah.
I've
read
a lot of
interviews to prepare.
I should never be held accountable for the things that I say.
Oh, really? One last thing is, what is up with IMDb and your your biography? It looks like they kind of have a mixture of love and contempt for you.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, plus, you know, IMDb is not a reliable source.
Mm-hmm.
It credits me for movies that I'm not in.
Like Hairspray?
Like Hairspray. Mm-hmm. I am not an uncredited extra. I never was on the set of Hairspray, mm-hmm. the second one. And it has Fruitcake as mm-hmm. being in production.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there might be a couple of other things.
Yeah, I don't know if you know
like,
the guy.
I never did that.
I don't know if you know the guy that wrote it or not, but it seems like he's certainly has like he's kind of in love with you, it seems like, but also, too, it's just like, he's...
It's like your ex-boyfriend or something.
Maybe it is. I don't know who writes those things.
It's like, I'll get even with her.
You know, if I had to, I can't worry about stuff like mm-hmm. that.
Well, have a fantastic day in Baltimore, Maryland.
Well, thank you. It's already 4 o'clock here.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's getting close to four, so it's cooling off just a bit, and it's been good. I got some exercise in.
Well, you know, we're actually taping this out of the Baltimore, Maryland airport. What's for dinner?
Oh, a fabulous chicken primavera pesto salad.
Mm. I hope you made enough for three.
I made plenty. I'm eating it for a week. Please come take it away from me.
All right. Well, we will see you on August 14th here in Chicago.
I'm looking so forward to it. I adore Chicago. Yeah. It's one of the nicest cities I've ever spent time in.
And that theater that you're presenting at is just fantastic. It's the Music Box. They have an organ.
An old pipe organ.
The before shows. It's just a wonderful place to see a movie like this.
I mean, I think Chicago, except for your winters.
Mm-hmm. I know. Believe me, I'm ready to... Well, how can I believe you moved from L.A. to Baltimore, Maryland?
I live across the street from the house I grew up in.
Wow.
Yes. Is that traumatic sometimes?
Well, it was traumatic that I got here, you know, thinking that I was going to get some time with my mom, and she died 2 months after I got here. That was traumatic.
I'm so sorry.
Don't worry about it. That was years ago, but mm-hmm. it was... That was traumatic, but no, I love my neighborhood is a time warp.
Because you feel like you can walk down and it brings back so many pleasant memories.
Because it hasn't changed.
Oh.
They're still wearing beehives?
There's still Madras in this neighborhood. People still wear Madras. And the guy behind me is somebody I've known since childhood. The boy who grew up next door to me lives three blocks away. You know, I mean, there's still people I've known from earliest memories still live in this neighborhood. Plus, visually, the neighborhood has not changed.
Well, I'm sure the city of Baltimore is happy to have you there.
I hope so. I mean, you know, I had to find a whole new band and stuff, so that was difficult, but I do have a wonderful band now. I had a wonderful band in L.A., but I have a wonderful band here as well.
Are you playing out in Baltimore a lot?
Well, not a lot, no. We are working on getting our first album done.
Mm.
You know, we're not in the studio yet, but that's our goal.
Well, send it to us. We'll play it on the show.
Absolutely.
So it'll be fantastic because we're going to leave people with Female Trouble by a cover of it.
That I did?
No, somebody else did.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I'm actually working on, I have not recorded officially, but I have a demo of a mm-hmm. Female Trouble that I do, and I do it as a duet with Peaches. But I'm working on a whole new version of it that's going to go on my album that's really, really good.
Mm.
Oh, one thing I wanted to know is now that you're closer to New York City, any chance we'll see you on Law & Order?
Oh, I have no idea. Nobody's contacted me.
If there is a God out there in heaven, John Waters, if you're listening, help Minx Don't Make It Happen. I think you would be a fantastic guest on that show.
On Law & Order.
Oh, yeah. I think that's there's your calling.
I want to see you commit murder and get away with
it. And get away with it, yes.
Finally.
Yes, I would like that. What pleases me is homicide.
I think you have the chops to be a lawyer.
Oh, easy.
And then you can combine your dream of being a lawyer with your reality of being an actor.
I'm not a lawyer, but I play one on TV. There you go.
Mink, I'm sending you lots of hugs and kisses. We're dying to see you here in Chicago. It's been a pleasure.
You will come, won't you, to the show?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we might actually present you guys.
Oh, fabulous.
Yes. So
we'll introduce something also there.
I'll bring out a whip and chains and juggle some plates for you.
Okay. Just don't bring me any meth.
No meth.
We'll be doing lots of shots. Woo!
Okay, guys. This was fun.
Thank you, Mink.
Thank you. Uh-huh. I'll see you in Chicago.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mink Stole lives in Baltimore, Maryland. You can learn more about All About Evil through our website, feastoffun.com, or visit the website, allaboutevil.com.
themovie.com.
Coming soon to a town near you. That's going to be in Chicago.
It'll be in Chicago on August 14th at the Music Box Theater. And also the day before, it will be in Milwaukee on August 13th. So you can catch up Mink Stole and Peaches Christ both live in the flesh for a 4D experience.
In the heart of the Midwest. And we're going to be there here in Chicago. So if you want to hang out with us and the gang, we recommend that you get your tickets now because it probably will sell out. If you like the show, comment on the website feastoffun.com or retweet it. Follow us on Twitter at Feast of Fun.
And also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/feastoffun.
We're going to leave you here with the song Female Trouble, the band The Blue Hippos from their album 4040. It's a cover of the original song from John Waters' film, iconic landmark film Female Trouble. We highly recommend you get it. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Gillian.
Bye, everyone.
Female Trouble. Maybe I'm twisted. Where they say I'm more, I don't care. So go ahead, don't let me change. I've got lots of problems, female trouble. Maybe I'm twisted, female trouble. I've got lots of problems.